Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march or demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, "We have a problem." She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So you could just see
$600,000 deducted.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, "Hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. "Man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here." "Oh, man." He said, "This woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor." Every tax check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie Dawson, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for 2 straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government. Plus, I had to pay my current taxes. I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. Mm. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up, because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling, because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. It's who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven. The radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this, because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last run. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back. Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking, And Master Ronnie saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this hen got my name on it. Something I need to know. He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package gonna go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go over on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cat. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarion. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarion took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarion, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarion Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarion can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Okay, today we got income versus housing prices, and of course we'll take your calls to 619-768-2945. Of course, last night was, yesterday was Super Tuesday, so if you guys wanted to talk about that, we will talk about that as well. But yesterday I brought up audio that I wanted to play, and I got it today, so let me play that on a visit to India.
As the sun rises over the Arabian Sea on the coastal city of Mumbai, the day is beginning for the 10 million people who live in the crowded city slums. The Hegre family lives in the Kalava slum, in this tiny 10 by 10 foot concrete room. The 60 neighbors who live on their small lane all share just four toilets and this small room for bathing. The Hegre's three daughters, six-year-old twins Anisha and Tanisha, and 12-year-old big sister Anchal, are up early getting ready for school. Their mother, Parvati, helps get the girls and her husband, Rajesh, out the door. After their dad drops the girls off at school, he heads to his job at a security company where he earns about $200 a month. Then Parvati cleans their house, makes lunch and dinner, and performs her daily prayers. Then the most important task of all, she collects the next day's supply of water. In this slum, water only flows during a two-hour window, just once a day.
I felt that you can't come to India without experiencing what we've all heard about the poverty. But I also wanted to frame that story in such a way that it represented the truth of the people. Anchal, I think this is so wonderful that you're giving me the tour guide. You speak English so well. So it wasn't just people living in slums, eating out of the trash piles and not having a place to defecate and all the stuff that comes with being extremely, extremely poor. But for me, every story is about the heart of the people. And so what is the heart of the people? How do you find a story that shows somebody who is living a life of sparseness, of poverty, but also still has the heart? Thank you. Namaste.
Namaste.
Namaste. Great. All right, we're going here?
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Namaste.
Namaste.
Showers of blessings. Oh, thank you.
Namaste.
Thank you, family. Thank you. I have to tell you, when I stepped in the door, I was thinking, okay, where is the house? Okay, where's the rest of the house? And then I realized I was already in it.
All right, everybody quiet, please.
Okay, I wanted to start off by just saying thank you for allowing me into your home. How long have you lived in this home?
Living for 33 years.
33 years?
Yes.
You don't look 33 years old, but you've lived here your whole life?
Yeah.
So your family was here before?
Yeah, my family is also here.
In this space?
Yes, this space.
And this is the entire space. The entire family lives and sleeps in this space.
Mm.
One, two, three, four, five of you sleep in this room.
In this room.
You eat in this room.
Yeah.
You play in this room.
Mm.
You share family time together in this room, which is from here to here. The five of you.
Yeah.
Okay. This may be an obvious question, and I don't mean to be offensive, but does it ever feel crowded? Does it feel crowded?
No.
It doesn't feel crowded.
No, we just manage it. We have a habit of sleeping because we don't feel anything.
You don't feel anything?
Yeah.
And how do you do it? I mean, how do you physically do it?
I sleep in that corner.
Where I am right now?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And she sleeps over here, my mother over here, my another sister over here, and my father over here.
Okay. All right. Would you say this is... is this a hard life? Is it difficult?
Yes, ma'am.
It is. Yeah. And tell me what's the most difficult thing about it.
Difficult work, tell us that my mother work will come. My family will not do it.
Means he has a problem that he cannot manage his salary enough for four people.
For the people.
Yeah.
This was an arranged marriage, right?
Yeah.
It was an arranged marriage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did it turn into a love marriage?
After 1 year, I love it.
After 1 year, you love it. Is he a good partner?
Yeah, very good partner.
Good partner.
Yeah.
Do you have a good life with him?
Yeah, very nice life.
I recently renovated this 100 square foot building into a cozy tiny home. And in this video, I'll show you around and break down the cost along the way. So, let's get started. You enter the property from the side because the building is located in my garden, detached from the main house here in the east of England. I've lived in the house for 4 years, but it's currently undergoing some major renovations, so the tiny house gives me somewhere to live in the meantime. When the house is finished, I'll be renting it out, so this tiny space will serve as storage for my stuff, as I'll be moving away for a while. The extra tall fence can make the space feel darker, but will provide privacy to the tenants if ever I need to come and collect something. Now, you enter the tiny home via this lobby, which feels surprisingly spacious thanks to the wall-to-wall floor mat. When paired with these wall-hung shoe storage boxes, it really helps to maximize the space, and if they are any deeper, I'll be walking into them all the time. With the coat and key racks finishing off this space, and the total cost of everything in this room, from the floor mat, the shoe storage, and the coat rack was just £121. Not a bad start for this budget build, which I gave myself around £8,500 for. Now, as we take the long walk into the bathroom, it's worth mentioning that there was no running water in this building at all when the renovation started, so that was a significant extra cost. Now, of course, this is a small bathroom, but the shower feels incredibly spacious, and this wall was actually moved back in order to achieve this. which allows for a much more relaxing shower for someone as tall as me, and much more legroom when using the loo. The cost of this room was just over £1,100 in materials and £4,000 in labour, for a total of £5,124, which is where the majority of the budget for this entire renovation went. But you may have noticed there's no sink, which means washing your hands in the kitchen. A small space calls for a small kitchen, and that's exactly what I've done here. But despite that, there's still plenty of room to store, prep, and cook food at home. There's no oven in here, but I rarely use one anyway, and this four-burner cooktop is more than enough to cook all of my meals, and the microwave is great for reheating any leftovers. The angled extractor fan is compact, which allows me to see what I'm cooking, whilst the smaller fridge allows room on top and down the side to store more things. Now, I think upgrading this toaster to an air fryer would be a huge upgrade for this kitchen, but I want to know what you think, so let me know in the comments below what you think would be the biggest upgrade to this kitchen. Oh, and I almost forgot to mention that these two walls are magnetic whiteboards, which I use all the time to make notes, plan my days, and make lists of things I need to do. To heat the space, I use this electric radiator, because I didn't want to run any gas lines into the property, as that would have massively increased cost. As for keeping it cool, I just have to open the window and the door, and the place will cool down within minutes. The cost of this kitchen is a little more complicated, because I had to work up in Splashback already from a different project. I also got a few things from Facebook Marketplace to help keep the cost down, such as the cooktop, extractor fan, and even the tap. In total though, it cost me just under £1,300, and if you added a little bit more for the bits I got for free, you could look to spend around £1,700 in order to achieve a similar look. Finishing off the kitchen, I have this floor-to-ceiling cupboard, which stores the majority of my possessions. Paring down from a three-bed house to a seven-shelf cupboard did take some time, but it was something I was going to need to do anyway before the end of the year when I move away. And now we get to where I spend most of my days, the office. I wanted this area to feel more luxurious and professional, as I knew I'd be spending the majority of my time here, as a software engineer during the day and a wannabe YouTuber at night. So that's why I chose to make the desk out of a piece of solid oak from an old dining table which I found on Facebook Marketplace, which, when combined with the sit-stand desk frame, gives a lot of flexibility when working. The dual monitors are mounted to this stand, which looks much cleaner than just keeping them both on the desk, and more importantly, it provides a lot more space for everything else. This space will be getting even cleaner soon too, as this PC has just been replaced by my new personal laptop, which is a significant upgrade over my 12-year-old PC. And the reason I could afford this upgrade is because of you. By watching my previous video and subscribing, I managed to unlock monetization. And with that first video payslip, I upgraded my setup in order to make better videos. So if you have enjoyed this video so far, please consider subscribing, pressing the bell icon, and why not like the video while you're down there too. It's really helping the channel a lot in these early days. Thank you. As for the cost of everything in this office, I spent just £301. Now, I know what a lot of you are thinking. Why did I use such a dark color in this tiny space? And look, I get it. This was the first space I ever designed myself from start to finish, and I learned a lot about interior design along the way. However, even after living in here for 6 months, I still absolutely love this blue. It may not be for everybody, but for me, it works, and it's never made the space feel claustrophobic at all. If I'm not out and about, this is where I spend most of my evenings. And whilst I don't use the sofa in this mode too much, when it's set up as a recliner, it becomes a perfect hangout space for relaxing, playing games, and watching TV. Speaking of, I have this 49-inch LG TV mounted to the wall, which may seem like it's at a terrible viewing angle, but it is actually on this extendable mount, so the entire TV pulls out and rotates 90 degrees, so that you can see it while sitting on the sofa. In fact, you can rotate this TV any way you like. You can watch TV whilst cooking, washing up, or even on the toilet. The wall-mounted PS4 behind the TV ensured that minimal space was used, whilst allowing me to be always just a click of a button away from jumping into some games. To transform this space into a bedroom, I simply have to pull out the sofa, set up the legs, and lay the back on the floor. This gives me about a small double bed in total. I fit. Right? So how much did this all cost? Well, I came into this with a budget of £8,500, and looking back at the kitchen, bathroom, and everything else we've seen so far, they all came to a total of just under £6,700. And when you add in the near £1,200 for the living room section, the total so far comes to £7,870. And that leaves just the miscellaneous section, which includes things like the fencing, electrics, and anything else that didn't naturally fit into any of the other categories. And in total, that came to just under £2,400, leading to a grand total of £10,241. I'll admit it's a little bit over budget, but by doing the work myself, I helped keep that cost from getting even more out of control. So that leaves one more question. Was it worth it? Well, I've actually lived here now for 6 months, and I'm really enjoying being in this space. But besides being just somewhere for me to live whilst the house gets renovated, I actually had the whole house evaluated before and after I did this renovation, and the number surprised me. For what cost me £10,000 to renovate, it added £30,000 of value to the house, which was far more than I ever expected. I thought maybe I'd get the money that I invested into it back, but to see that it tripled my investment blew my mind. There are some links in the description below to a lot of the products you've seen throughout this video. And if you want to actually see me transform this space from start to finish, then click right here or here to see that video, because not everything went to plan. And with that, please consider liking the video, subscribing to the channel if you're new around here, and I will see you next time.
All right, today our jump-off title here, as in the program notes here on Blog Talk Radio, is Income versus Housing Prices. Income versus Housing Prices. Now, what I've loaded up, and I'm going to play them again, are two videos that I mentioned yesterday, playing the audio portion of them. The first one is an interview with Oprah Winfrey. Well, what she interviewed, we didn't interview her, but she interviewed a family in India where it's a family of five, and they live off of one paycheck, $200 a month, within the space of 100 square feet. Five people. Now, a lot of people, particularly in Western countries, particularly in the United States, a lot of people, just on an individual basis, they can't imagine themselves living in a space of 100 square feet. But the two audios that we're going to play today, we're going to repeat them real quick so we can discuss it, is once again a family of five happy people in 100 square feet. And then the last audio we play, we're going to play that again, a guy in England who took 100 square feet. You know, he turned a 100-square-foot shed, or whatever you want to call it, he turned 100-foot into a chic European tiny house. So here it is. You got a family of five happy in a tiny house and a real chic European place of, you know, 100 square feet. And he built it, what he said, 6,000 pounds. Really affordable price. Okay. And the family from India, that 100 square feet represents to that family generational wealth, because before the current family, the husband, he grew up in that. His parents had it. All right. So and then we'll open up the phone lines on that. Plus we'll be discussing what we have going on this and that relates to that. So income versus housing prices. Let's go to the Oprah interview. If I can find it. I was just looking at it. Where is it? Okay, wait a minute. Let's see. All right, that's the last one. We don't want to play that just yet. Oh, here it is. I found it was right in front of me.
As the sun rises over the Arabian Sea on the coastal city of Mumbai, the day is beginning for the 10 million people who live in the crowded city slums. The Hegre family lives in the Kalava slum in this tiny 10 by 10 foot concrete room. The 60 neighbors who live on their small lane all share just 4 toilets and this small room for bathing. The Hegre's 3 daughters, 6-year-old twins Anisha and Tanisha, and 12-year-old big sister Anchal are up early getting ready for school. Their mother, Parvati, helps get the girls and her husband, Rajesh, out the door. After their dad drops the girls off at school, he heads to his job at a security company where he earns about $200 a month. Then Parvati cleans their house, makes lunch and dinner, and performs her daily prayers. Then the most important task of all, she collects the next day's supply of water. In this slum, water only flows during a 2-hour window, just once a day.
I felt that you can't come to India without experiencing what we've all heard about the poverty. But I also wanted to frame that story in such a way that it represented the truth of the people. Anchal,
yeah.
I think this is so wonderful that you're giving me the tour guide. You speak English so well. So it wasn't just people living in slums, eating out of the trash piles and not having a place to defecate and all the stuff that comes with being extremely, extremely poor. But for me, every story is about the heart of the people. And so what is the heart of the people? How do you find a story that shows somebody who is living a life of sparseness, of poverty, but also still has the heart? Thank you. Namaste.
Namaste.
Namaste. Great. All right, we're going here?
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Namaste.
Namaste.
Showers of blessings. Oh, thank you.
Namaste.
Thank you, family. Thank you. I have to tell you, when I stepped in the door, I was thinking, okay, where is the house? Okay, where's the rest of the house? And then I realized I was already in it.
All right, everybody quiet, please.
Okay, I wanted to start off by just saying thank you for allowing me into your home. How long have you lived in this home?
Living for 33 years.
33 years?
Yeah.
You don't look 33 years old, but you've lived here your whole life?
Yeah.
So your family was here before?
Yeah, my family is also here.
In this space?
This space.
And this is the entire space. The entire family lives and sleeps in this space.
Mm.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of you sleep in this room.
In this room.
You eat in this room. You play in this room. You share family time together in this room, which is from here to here. The five of you. Okay. This may be an obvious question, and I don't mean to be offensive, but does it ever feel crowded? Does it feel crowded?
No.
It doesn't feel crowded.
No, we just manage it. We have a habit of sleeping because we don't feel anything.
You don't feel anything?
Yeah.
And how do you do it? I mean, how do you physically do it?
I sleep in that corner.
Where I am right now?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And she sleeps over here, my mother over here, my another sister over here, and my father over here.
Okay. All right. Would you say this is... is this a hard life? Is it difficult?
Yes, ma'am.
It is. Yeah. And tell me what's the most difficult thing about it.
Difficult work, then I find that my work will come. My family will not be able to do it.
Means he has a problem at that he cannot manage his salary enough for four people. Yeah.
This was an arranged marriage, right?
Yeah.
Was it arranged marriage?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did it turn into a love marriage?
After 1 year, I love it.
After 1 year, you love it. Is he a good partner?
Yeah, very good partner.
Good partner.
Yeah.
Do you have a good life with him?
Yeah, very nice life.
Okay, so, and we have that posted on our Facebook page, which is BRY Shacks. B as in boy, I as in ideal, Y, build it yourself. BRY stands for Build It Yourself Shacks. That's our Facebook page, and we have that video posted on there if you want to see the visual of it. And once again, five people in a 100-square-foot house, a home, five happy campers, paycheck money in dollars, $200 a month, sustains five people. Sometimes, as you heard, the dad doesn't know how they will make it, but they manage to eke out 3 squares a day for every day. Everybody's clean. Everybody's happy. They've got everything that they need. All right. Now, this next audio is a guy in England. Let me find it. I knew it was right in front of me. He took, here it is. Well, he took a shit in his backyard, 100 square feet. Same 100 square feet, 10 by 10. Okay, and turned it into a chic, tiny house.
I recently renovated this 100 square foot building into a cozy, tiny home. And in this video, I'll show you around and break down the cost along the way. So, let's get started. You enter the property from the side because the building is located in my garden, detached from the main house here in the east of England. I've lived in the house for 4 years, but it's currently undergoing some major renovations, so the tiny house gives me somewhere to live in the meantime. When the house is finished, I'll be renting it out, so this tiny space will serve as storage for my stuff, as I'll be moving away for a while. The extra tall fence can make the space feel darker, but will provide privacy to the tenants if ever I need to come and collect something. Now, you enter the tiny home via this lobby, which feels surprisingly spacious thanks to the wall-to-wall floor mat. When paired with these wall-hung shoe storage boxes, it really helps to maximize the space, and if they are any deeper, I'll be walking into them all the time. With the coat and key racks finishing off this space, and the total cost of everything in this room, from the floor mat, the shoe storage, and the coat rack, was just £121. Not a bad start for this budget build, which I gave myself around £8,500 for. Now, as we take the long walk into the bathroom, it's worth mentioning that there was no running water in this building at all when the renovation started, so that was a significant extra cost. Now, of course, this is a small bathroom, but the shower feels incredibly spacious, and this wall was actually moved back in order to achieve this, which allows for a much more relaxing shower for someone as tall as me, and much more legroom when using the loo. The cost of this room was just over £1,100 in materials and £4,000 in labour, for a total of £5,124, which is where the majority of the budget for this entire renovation went. But you may have noticed there's no sink, which means washing your hands in the kitchen. A small space calls for a small kitchen, and that's exactly what I've done here. But despite that, there's still plenty of room to store, prep, and cook food at home. There's no oven in here, but I rarely use one anyway, and this 4-burner cooktop is more than enough to cook all of my meals, and the microwave is great for reheating any leftovers. The angled extractor fan is compact, which allows me to see what I'm cooking, whilst the smaller fridge allows room on top and down the side to store more things. Now, I think upgrading this toaster to an air fryer would be a huge upgrade for this kitchen, but I want to know what you think, so let me know in the comments below what you think would be the biggest upgrade to this kitchen. Oh, and I almost forgot to mention that these two walls are magnetic whiteboards, which I use all the time to make notes, plan my days, and make lists of things I need to do. To heat the space, I use this electric radiator, because I didn't want to run any gas lines into the property, as that would have massively increased cost. As for keeping it cool, I just have to open the window and the door, and the place will cool down within minutes. The cost of this kitchen is a little more complicated, because I had the worked up and splashback already from a different project. I also got a few things from Facebook Marketplace to help keep the cost down, such as the cooktop, extractor fan, and even the tap. In total though, it cost me just under £1,300, and if you added a little bit more for the bits I got for free, you could look to spend around £1,700 in order to achieve a similar look. Finishing off the kitchen, I have this floor-to-ceiling cupboard, which stores the majority of my possessions. Paring down from a three-bed house to a seven-shelf cupboard did take some time, but it was something I was going to need to do anyway before the end of the year when I move away. And now we get to where I spend most of my days, the office. I wanted this area to feel more luxurious and professional, as I knew I'd be spending the majority of my time here, as a software engineer during the day and a wannabe YouTuber at night. So that's why I chose to make the desk out of a piece of solid oak from an old dining table which I found on Facebook Marketplace, which, when combined with the sit-stand desk frame, gives a lot of flexibility when working. The dual monitors are mounted to this stand, which looks much cleaner than just keeping them both on the desk, and more importantly, it provides a lot more space for everything else. This space will be getting even cleaner soon too, as this PC has just been replaced by my new personal laptop, which is a significant upgrade over my 12-year-old PC, and the reason I could afford this upgrade is because of you. By watching my previous video and subscribing, I managed to unlock monetization, and with that first video pay slip, I upgraded my setup in order to make better videos. So if you have enjoyed this video so far, please consider subscribing, pressing the bell icon, and why not like the video while you're down there too? It's really helping the channel a lot in these early days. Thank you. As for the cost of everything in this office, I spent just £301. Now, I know what a lot of you are thinking. Why did I use such a dark color in this tiny space? And look, I get it. This was the first space I ever designed myself from start to finish, and I learned a lot about interior design along the way. However, even after living in here for 6 months, I still absolutely love this blue. It may not be for everybody, but for me, it works, and it's never made the space feel claustrophobic at all. If I'm not out and about, this is where I spend most of my evenings, and whilst I don't use the sofa in this mode too much, when it's set up as a recliner, it becomes a perfect hangout space for relaxing, playing games, and watching TV. Speaking of, I have this 49-inch LG TV mounted to the wall, which may seem like it's at a terrible viewing angle, but it is actually on this extendable mount, so the entire TV pulls out and rotates 90 degrees so that you can see it while sitting on the sofa. In fact, you can rotate this TV any way you like, so you can watch TV whilst cooking, washing up, or even on the toilet. The wall-mounted PS4 behind the TV ensured that minimal space was used, whilst allowing me to be always just a click of a button away from jumping into some games. To transform this space into a bedroom, I simply have to pull out the sofa, set up the legs, and lay the back on the floor. This gives me about a small double bed in total. I fit. Right? So how much did this all cost? Well, I came into this with a budget of £8,500, and looking back at the kitchen, bathroom, and everything else we've seen so far, they all came to a total of just under £6,700. And when you add in the near £1,200 for the living room section, the total so far comes to £7,870. And that leaves just the miscellaneous section, which includes things like the fencing, electrics, and anything else that didn't naturally fit into any of the other categories. And in total, that came to just under £2,400, leading to a grand total of £10,241. I'll admit it's a little bit over budget, but by doing the work myself, I helped keep that cost from getting even more out of control. So that leaves one more question. Was it worth it? Well, I've actually lived here now for 6 months, and I'm really enjoying being in this space. But besides being just somewhere for me to live whilst the house gets renovated, I actually had the whole house valuated before and after I did this renovation, and the number surprised me. For what cost me £10,000 to renovate, it added £30,000 of value to the house, which was far more than I ever expected. I thought maybe I'd get the money that I invested into it back, but to see that it tripled my investment blew my mind. There are some links in the description below to a lot of the products you've seen throughout this video. And if you want to actually see me transform this space from start to finish, then click right here or here to see that video, because not everything went to plan. And with that, please consider liking the video, subscribing to the channel if you're new around here, and I will see you next time.
All right, now, before we go to the phone lines here, now it's I posted most of the video portion of those audios on our Facebook page, which is BIY Shacks, Build It Yourself Shacks, on Facebook. And I, you know what? 100 square feet of living area is what I would call globally middle class. Matter of fact, let's see. Because half of the planet lives on less than $10 a day. You got 8 billion people on the planet. Hold, let me get the stats on this. Let's see, wait a minute. I don't want it on YouTube. Let's see. Number of people living on less than, all right, well, let's go for $1.25. Okay, let's get the stats on this. You got 8 billion people on the planet, and according to what I'm reading here on global poverty, and I'm coming up with my own definition of that. I've just formulated my own definition of rich, too. Around 1.89 billion people, or nearly 36% of the world's population, live on less than $1.25 per day. So that's more than 25% of the global population. Now let's see. Yes, I'm trying to look for a graph or a pie chart. Let's see. Number of people living on less than, let's say, $5 per day. Now, let's say, this guy and his family in India, let's do the math on this, arithmetic on this real quick. All right, he earns $200 a month. That's his paycheck. That $200 a month sustains a family of five. So let's take $200 divided by 30 days. So he's living off of $6 a day, $6.66 a day. Okay, so let's go to some statistics here. Out of 8 billion. Over 1.9 billion people, or 26% of the world's population, were living on less than $3.20 a day. Okay, close to 46% of the world's population was living off of less than $5.50 a day. So the guy in the family, in his family, once again, I've posted that video on our Facebook page, BIY, which stands for Build It Yourself, Shacks. He's doing better than half the planet at $200 a week, a month, at $200 a month, which breaks down to $6.66 a day. He is doing better than half of the people on planet Earth at this time, March, what's today's date? 6/2024. My definition of rich, which I've come up with, I might change, but this morning, is essentially having more than you can use or need on a daily basis. I might have to tweak that. So most people, particularly in the Western world, or Western countries, you've got more than you actually. Man, I'm living in a place right now. It looks like a regular old neighborhood, but I don't use all 10 of these rooms. So I'm working on a definition of poverty too. I'm still working on that. But anyway, so that guy and his family, see, that's why I like to use like words like slum and ghetto and all that, because once again, going by, this is not my statistics. Okay, I'm reading again. Close to 46% of the world's population, that's almost half, are living off less than $5.50 a day. He has $6.66 a day, and that sustains him and his family. You might not cut it in Beverly Hills, California, but that's okay, because most people in Beverly Hills, and here's the thing about all human, the first thing, number one, is only 24 hours a day for all of us, no matter what kind of paycheck we get. That's 24 hours, that's it. Second thing is, no matter what kind of paychecks or paychecks we don't get, we can only individually, it's physics, we can only occupy one space at a time. So his family makes good use of their 100 square feet, where somebody in Beverly Hills, California, it's over the top, man. They can't, whoever you got in there, unless you got a gang of people in each room in that mansion in Beverly Hills, you're not using all of that space. You know, several years ago, the late Ed McMahon, before he passed away, he was in foreclosure, losing his house. Donald Trump came along and, you know, paid off the mortgage and whatnot. But basically, Ed McMahon was living like a lot of Americans. You were living in a space that you were not using. Matter of fact, even myself, right at the beginning of the pandemic, I had to let go of, I've got 14, 15 acres of land now. I had to let go of 40 acres at the beginning of the pandemic. That's one of the lessons I learned. When you get to certain stages, no, you can't handle stuff by yourself. You're going to have to bring on partners. And if you don't, you're going to end up losing it. But I had to get rid of 40 acres myself. Now, if I had partners on that, it would have, you know, I would have been able, you know, because half the pie is better than no pie at all. But in any event, so those two videos are posted on our BIY Shacks Facebook page. And, look, 100 square feet might not seem like much, but it's because really it's all subjective. This man, I mean, culturally, the wealth of that family, which is living above over half the people out of the 8 billion people on this planet, okay, was generational wealth. They got 100 square feet. It served one family well, and then the son gets it for his family. And now you got, you know, additional family members that are happy. They don't have to, you know, $200. And can you imagine what it was when he was young? You know, but $200, so you got to, that's the way they roll. A lot of this is just very, very subjective. Now, some of you out there that are listening, that you're taking in more. Some of y'all do are making more than $200 a day. So imagine what you can do if you change your geography or lifestyle or a combination of the two. Anyway, let's go to the phone lines right now. Oh, before we go, well, Asset School, we'll go in more detail this month on that. But income versus housing, because right here in the United States, you have a lot of people that matter of fact, hold on, let's look at this. This guy, let's do the arithmetic on this. Now, I don't know what his $200 a month salary covers where they stay, which is generational wealth. It's been passed down at least one generation so far. It takes care of the roof over their head, which includes utilities. They got food to eat for five people, 2-3 square meals a day. So 200 a month times, that's $2,400 a year. There's a lot of people that listen to this podcast right now that make more than that in a month. Now, the other guy, he said 6,000 pounds. Let's convert that to dollars on our currency converter. If you don't have a currency converter on your phone or electronic device, they're free online. All right. So, he spent, let's say, 6,000 pounds. Okay, to renovate that shed in his backyard into a nice little chic tiny house. So we convert that to dollars, it will be $7,649.11. So that's in dollars. Now he said, by just the value of it though, was up to $30,000. Okay. So, but anyway, 6,000 out of pocket pounds. All right. So, those are two examples of where, particularly the one in the UK, where, well, put it this way, in both cases, there's no mortgage. There's no mortgage. Okay, let's keep that in mind. All right, let's go to the phone lines. 309, area code, your mic is open.
Good morning, LA. You know what?
Good morning.
You said here saying, what is it, 46% of the world lives on less than $5 a day?
So, you know, right now, March, yeah, it lives on less than $5 a day.
Yeah, that's, you know, I heard the first 25% or 20%, and then you turned around and it went again, you know. It'd come up to 46, but the first one was $1 a day. $1 a
day.
Yeah,
you got over a, you have practically almost 2 billion on the planet.
2 billion people. Right. Almost 2 billion people on this planet live on less than $1 a day. The 46% total there live on less than $5 a day. Yeah, I wonder what the next 25 is. You know, what's that next 25? And see the difference between where they figure the line of greed starts. Because this is silly, you know, just to think about that. And knowing that these people that are in these countries and stuff that are living on a dollar a day are some of the nicest people on earth. That's the thing.
Right.
A lot of those people are the nicest people on earth, and they are the happiest people for what they have, because they're happy that they have at least that. And that's the biggest thing that, you know, I was kind of getting out of what you were saying right here at the end of this, was I went straight to thinking about who they are and why they are. And, you know, I'd rather be thankful than to be, I guess, gregarious might be a word to use in that. You know, somebody putting out that I have more than you and I'm going to show you. And I'm gonna walk different than you. I'm going to hold my head in a different direction than you are. Knowing that all they are is just having a thought in their head as well. They just got a lucky ride on it. But, you know, hard work does pay off. But I guarantee you those people that are working for $1 and $5 or having that are working harder than you are to get what you have. And, yeah, it just hit me. I just had to think about it a little bit, you know, because I've met some of the people that come from them poor countries. And I know why they're here. they're here because they get paid this much, a year's wage in a day. And when they can get a year's wage in a day, they can send a lot back because they're used to living on that dollar. Now, it's going to cost them more. They're here. But it ain't going to cost them what they're getting. And each dollar extra that they are able to do and send back sends generational wealth back to those communities that are struggling and knowing what a dollar actually can do.
Right, exactly. So I think, you know, just from you know, I think the 100 square, you can't go wrong with a 100 square foot building. You know, it's not a fit for everybody. But I think if you put them out there, you won't have any problem selling them or renting them out.
Or renting them out. That's right. Because somebody's right. Always traveling. And one of the things, you know, people need to think about, if you got a college in your city, think about it. If you can put them people closer to their loved ones or give them a space that they could actually have some private time with their kids by having one of these units in a situation, they would rent it, and they would pay you more for it than a hotel.
Right.
And they'll also rent it next year. They'll already book out when they're coming back. So you'll be booked. You know, when you start getting it this way, you'll figure it out that if you provide it, people will use it. They will get it. And they just got to know there's an option. But when we don't have no options
right.
out there, then we don't even have options during the year. So, and, you know, I like the way we kind of went into that discussion yesterday on if you had, you know, five, let one be somebody that's going to take care of the other four in it, or if you had 10 and you got two people, share the thing there. But at the same time, you know, if you figured in $20 to $25 to have that unit cleaned and beautified and made beautiful, and the person that's taking care of it can have pride in what they just finished and how beautiful it looks and it's ready for that next person, they also realize, you know, I made $25 for doing that. You know, and now I'm going over to this other place and I'm going to clean up whatever it is that's going on over there, have it all straightened out and beautiful, and I'm going to make $20-$25 for that. And
right.
Now, if they did five of them, you know, if you had five of them, but they did four, that's $100 a day. And plus they had a place to stay. But they also
right.
had pride in what they did, and they only worked 2 hours to do it. But you didn't work at all. And how much did you make?
Right, right. Hmm. Oh, you there? Hello? Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
No, you didn't lose me. I just went on mute.
Okay. All right. Well, now, let's see. Going back to that building we were talking about yesterday. So, that's, 96 square feet? 100 square feet? Hello.
I'm sorry. What was that question, LA?
The metal building. We're talking about 100 square feet or 96 square feet.
Yep. That's 25.
Yeah, now, what would be the? You say how much?
$2,500.
Wait, $2,500. That's a good price. And that can be assembled. Now, go ahead, I'm listening.
You'll get all of your doors and windows and stuff like that will all come from your local stuff, because I don't know what you want in that direction. But
right.
if you tell me what you want in it, I can make your material for the rough openings of the doors and windows, so you still don't have to use a saw to put your doors and windows in.
Okay. There is the doors and windows can be sourced locally. Now let's see. I know we can pick it up to where we're going to, you know, manufacture the frame. But all right, what's the closest place? Like, we're in Florida. Like, let's say Orlando. Okay. What's the closest we can pick up a kit?
Probably
that way
Orlando.
We don't have to worry about shipping. Okay.
Probably Orlando.
All right.
It basically comes down to how busy are the factories in producing material. I hope they get really busy, but it does not matter at all. If somebody places an order, especially, you know, working just out of the one factory, and I know the other ones have availability too. I just know what I've been promised as far as discussions, because I just ain't been in a whole lot of discussions figuring out how busy some of them are. One of them was extremely busy, so I left him alone because he was making 30 million board feet for a job. And at the same time, I watched them grow to twice the size they were, and because they were preparing for what the future is about to bring here. So, you know, Orlando is a huge producer, and all that takes is just a little time. So yeah, it necessarily don't have to be delivered. You can come and pick it up, and that cost doesn't include delivery fee. So that's where I encourage people to order, come together, figure it out, you know, if nothing else, I will try to have more orders in that one direction.
Okay.
So that I can eliminate the carbon footprint of getting this stuff delivered, but I could have Amazon deliver it, I guess.
They deliver them. They do deliver everything almost. So does DoorDash. Now, let me see. You mentioned, now, financing, does that include financing or does not include financing?
No, they don't include financing, but you do have them options to where you can make payments to them. You know, it depends on what kind of situation people actually want to start getting themselves into. You know, if they're wanting to, you know, maybe make a community or something, make a change. You know, maybe, you know, it might work out to where we can collaborate together, because we can help you bring resources to that community that's going to be needed. And at the same time, I might be able to give you a deal. By producing more of them.
What would be to make it worth your time, a minimum order?
The minimum order to me is one.
96 square foot houses, or frames.
To me, that's one. You can order one house. I got a fire truck coming.
Mm-hmm.
All right, it passed.
Okay.
But yeah, one house, $2,500, and we can build any size home. Doesn't matter. I just happen to put this little package together that will give you what you need and you add what you want from your place. I'll give you the siding to go on the side of it, the roof to go on top of it, and the framework to build it. And quite honestly, I do not see you going and picking a shed up out at your Lowe's or Menards.
No, I'm not doing that. Yeah, I'm not doing that. That's retail.
Yeah, I know that Home Depot right now has a 140 square foot steel framed house. They want $11,000 for it.
That's
the frame.
I'd rather pick up.
That's the frame.
Yeah, I'd rather pick up. I'd rather deal with you, get it that way, and then pick up the other stuff just locally. Plywood or whatever we want. Windows, doors. I know where we can train people and all that, yeah.
Yeah, that way, I don't know what cabinets you want and stuff like that, but I can give you little pictures and lists of products that's right there in your local area, that'll go right in
right.
there. And I'll punch the holes for the electrical and the plumbing. So all you got to do is just run your pecs through it, pinch the ends off on them, do the quick connect thing. Man, you don't even have to, run a solder gun anymore to do plumbing. But at the same time, if you work out 781 projects and you don't just do one for you, it ain't about just you. It's getting these people to come together. Who do you know in your community? I don't know them. I'd like to. I'd like to show up and work with you. But it's how many people do you know in your community and how many people do they know in the community and how many will truly commit to watching a difference, just seeing it, showing up. Because once they won't want to stand there and watch someone else do it because they're watching it start from nothing. When it starts from nothing and it starts transforming, you're like, whoa, that went together pretty quickly. I'm like, I know, there's a wall. There's a roof. And people say, here, let me, because when I was going to build that with that 13-year-old, the 16-year-old, the 13-year-old was walking around and putting out the jigsaw puzzle. He was putting the pieces where they go. And as soon as he was done, he turns around and looks at me and he says, man, give me that gun. He says, you don't need to do that. Let me do it. I hand it to him, man, here and there, him and his brother. I started shooting pictures of him. I didn't pick the gun back up. He wouldn't let me. Once he was going, he didn't want to stop. Because then once they seen what they had put together, they're like, wow, you mean we really built that? I had it all, it was all stacked up professionally, Like, yeah, you guys did that. Right here in a parking lot. On this street with 100,000 people driving by watching you. I was like, I did it for a reason. But, 100,000 right. people didn't see them, but 100,000 people drive down that road every day. But for the 3 hours
hey, Chris,
that they were there.
Chris, hold on a minute. I'm going to replay one of these audios. The pig just woke up, so I got to go feed the pig before he tears up. I'll be back in a few minutes.
As the sun rises over the Arabian Sea on the coastal city of Mumbai, the day is beginning for the 10 million people who live in the crowded city slums. The Hegre family lives in the Kalaba slum in this tiny 10 by 10 foot concrete room. The 60 neighbors who live on their small lane all share just 4 toilets and this small room for bathing. The Hegres' 3 daughters, 6-year-old twins Anisha and Tanisha, and 12-year-old big sister Anchal are up early getting ready for school. Their mother, Parvati, helps get the girls and her husband, Rajesh, out the door. After their dad drops the girls off at school, he heads to his job at a security company where he earns about $200 a month. Then Parvati cleans their house, makes lunch and dinner, and performs her daily prayers. Then the most important task of all, she collects the next day's supply of water. In this slum, water only flows during a two-hour window, just once a day.
I felt that you can't come to India without experiencing what we've all heard about the poverty. But I also wanted to frame that story in such a way that it represented the truth of the people.
Anshal,
yeah.
I think this is so wonderful that you're giving me the tour guide. You speak English so well. So it wasn't just people living in slums, eating out of the trash piles and not having a place to defecate and all the stuff that comes with being extremely, extremely poor. But for me, every story is about the heart of the people. And so what is the heart of the people? How do you find a story that shows somebody who is living a life of sparseness, of poverty, but also still has the heart? Thank you. Namaste.
Namaste.
Namaste. Great. All right, we're going here?
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Namaste.
Namaste.
Showers of blessings. Oh, thank you.
Namaste.
Thank you, family. Thank you. I have to tell you, when I stepped in the door, I was thinking, okay, where is the house? Okay, where's the rest of the house? And then I realized I was already in it.
All right, everybody quiet, please.
Okay, I wanted to start off by just saying thank you for allowing me into your home. How long have you lived in this home?
Living for 33 years.
33
years?
Yeah. You don't look 33 years old, but you've lived here your whole life?
Yeah.
So your family was here before?
Yeah, my family is also here.
In this space?
This space.
And this is the entire space. The entire family lives and sleeps in this space.
Mm.
One, two, three, four, five of you sleep in this room.
In this room.
You eat in this room.
Mm.
You play in this room.
Mm.
You share family time together in this room, which is from here to here. The five of you.
Yeah.
Okay. This may be an obvious question, and I don't mean to be offensive, but does it ever feel crowded?
Mm-hmm.
Does it feel crowded?
No.
It doesn't feel crowded.
No, we just manage it. We have a habit of sleeping because we don't feel anything.
You don't feel anything?
Yeah.
And how do you do it? I mean, how do you physically do it?
I sleep in that corner.
Where I am right now?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And she sleeps over here, my mother over here, my another sister over here, and my father over here.
Okay. All right. Would you say this is this a hard life? Is it difficult?
Yes, ma'am.
It is.
Yeah.
And tell me what's the most difficult thing about it.
Difficult work, then I find that my mother work aayegi, my family will not do it.
Means he has a problem at that he cannot manage his salary enough for four people. Yeah.
This was an arranged marriage, right?
Yeah.
It was an arranged marriage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did it turn into a love marriage?
After 1 year, I love it.
After 1 year, you love it. Is he a good partner?
Yeah, very good partner.
Good partner.
Yeah.
Do you have a good life with him?
Yeah, very nice life.
Everybody, welcome to Vanessa's Van Life Journey. I am Vanessa, and I live in a van, and her name is Treasure. But right now, where is Treasure, y'all? Where Treasure is, y'all? See Treasure, y'all. Treasure done ran away, y'all. Anyway, you guys, I am here today in front of my new home, you guys. I still have treasure, so I still do van life, but I also have a travel trailer now, you guys. I purchased this travel trailer yesterday, you guys, and I am going to give you a empty house tour. This is my first travel trailer. I am so happy. Excuse my French. Excuse my look, y'all. I know I look rusty, dusty, and crusty. And yes, I am all of that because I have been cleaning my new home, and her name is Blessing. If you want to know more about how I got this travel trailer, just make sure you leave it in the comments down below. And let me know. Let me know if you want me to do a story time on how I got Blessing. So I'm going to show you guys Blessing. I guess I'll show you the outside of her first, and then we could go in the inside and do an empty house tour. Yay! I'm so excited! Is y'all happy for me? Look, is y'all happy for me? Not are you happy for me? Is y'all happy for me? Y'all, I got a house. I got something that I could stand up in. I got a bed, y'all. I ain't got to sleep on the floor no more, y'all. Come on, y'all. Let's take a look. Okay, you guys, so this is my new home. This is a travel trailer. This is a 1988 resort. I'm going to have to look in the front to see the full name of it. But this is my little travel trailer, you guys. It's not big, but it's big enough for me. So let me go around and take y'all around the front. Front of my travel trailer. This is where they have spaces for two propane tanks, batteries, and this is a Terry Resort by Fleetwood, you guys. So this is the outside of the trailer, and if you come around on this side, this is the other side of the trailer, and this is just all the stuff that I really don't know anything about. And that is the top of the trailer. So we have three windows on this side. This is the kitchen window. This is my window over the bed. And this is another window that would be over the bunk bed area. Seeing is a whole window for the front of the van, I think. Or I said van, I meant trailer. And this is the outside. I do have a covered patio area. I am renting the spot that my trailer is in, but my trailer, I purchased it. It could be towed away, and I could take it to wherever I want to. But for now, we're just going to continue to pay for the rent in the space that it was already in. And as you can see, I have a big window here. That's like the window over the kitchen area, over the table. And then this window right here is over the bed again. And then we just go in the inside. So let's go in the inside, you guys. What are you waiting on? Come in. Welcome in to my home. This is my humble abode. Welcome in.
Okay, I had to get on. Pet feeding, these pets have different feeding times. In any event, so I'm looking at the world population. And like I say, this guy sustains his family of five off of $6.66 a day. And hold on, let me look at let me see. All right, we got 8 billion people on the planet. 4.4 billion people, which is 71% of the global population, this old stat, lived on $10 a day or less. Okay, now let's $10 a day, let's go up to that. $10 a day times well, 365. So 71% of the planet, 6.2 billion people, live on $3,650 per year. That's it. So, well, that changes my paradigm. I'm gonna be looking for the people that live close to this, you know, particularly in the United States. People that, there's a whole lot of people that can, that earn $3,000 a year in this country, a whole bunch. That's the market I'm looking at. Anyway, Chris, any feedback from you that, but I just laid out those stats. That's amazing.
Well,
71%
I mean,
of the planet
my question.
Lives off of less than
$10
a day.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And that means 25% of the planet. There's people that's making millions of dollars a day. One person. Billions of dollars
right.
a day. One person. And, you know, that to me, you know, that is that disconnect because they're not realizing that they're only as strong as their weakest link and they don't care about the chain because they feel like they're surrounded by a nice group of in their circle that's going to take care of them because they're not in need. But all that money just gets parked and set. And you're talking about these people that if you walked up to somebody that was making a dollar a day and put $2 in their pocket, you know, they got 100% more money than they ever than they ever had before. And now look what could they do with it? What would they do with it? What are you going to do with it? And that's the key ingredient. But also those people don't all look for a handout. They're working for that dollar a day. They're doing
right. That's true. They are working.
They're working.
Right.
They're doing it and making products that you're buying for hundreds of dollars. So why is all them people in the middle got to make so much more money than the person that created it? That's you know.
Well, you know, I think it's really Chris probably a matter of. I think it could be a matter of awareness, you know, and then everybody's got their niche market.
Yeah, they do, but they also need to understand that the people that run your business are your business.
Right.
So if you're the one that needs to make $100 a day, but each of your 100 employees can make a dollar a day, then you got your values wrong.
Right.
And, you know, if you turn that down and say, okay, I'm going to give you, you know, nine times what I gave you before. So now you're actually going to make $10 off each one of, you know, you're going to make $10 for working them guys. But at the same time, they only made nine. You still made more than them, but you didn't touch it. Now go multiply that again and do it again and then do it again. But even if it was $5. $5 is 400% more money than they would ever have before. What do you think they would do? They're going to sell your product. They're going to be very happy to make your product better because they want people to realize they want to buy this product. They're going to talk good about you. You know, these are, and you know what? if you think about it, if you buy anything from any of them countries over there, you're supporting child labor because they're the ones that are getting the quarter and stuff to work all day making your products. But, you know, out of sight, out of mind, and just like you said, awareness. But these are little things. You're not going to work here in America for that price.
Right. You're absolutely correct. Well, we'll go more into these numbers. Let's see. Now you got a nighttime live stream podcast you guys do. Give us the information on that.
Yeah, that's Lone Wolf with Kyler Davenport on Blog Talk Radio at 6 o'clock Pacific Time, 8 o'clock Central, and 9 o'clock Eastern. It is a five-day-a-week show, and we just share news and truths and, you know, just facts out there. What's going on in the
phone number offhand for that? Do you know the call-in number for that offhand?
Yeah, I can get it here. Let's see. The number for the show. One of these days, here I'm sitting here trying to. He sent me so many stupid videos to beat out the last post I seen for the show. All right, 646-716-8423.
Okay. 646-716-8423. Okay. Well, there's a lot of people that, let's say a 350 square foot or 400 square foot frame, what would be the ballpark figures for those?
If it's sorry, because
that would get you know space.
Right. The framework would cost you. Basically, it's easy enough to figure somewhere in the ballpark of if you've got a 100 square foot one. And you can get the stuff for $2,500. Each 100 just adds $2,500 to it. So $200 to be a five.
Okay, all right, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. It just multiply by $2,500. Okay, so what's today, Wednesday? So today is Wednesday, tomorrow is Thursday. Because I want to start marketing this stuff so we can start taking orders. What's a good time to call you this afternoon, late this afternoon, or early evening?
Probably 6 o'clock Central.
Okay, my time or yours? Oh, 7 my time. All right. And that way, because I want to start marketing. Because I'm looking at, you know, like I say, if half the planet is good with 100 square feet, okay. But even over here, because it's like what I played that audio while I was teaching Henry the Pig. You have a bunch of people. There's a bunch of videos on YouTube. New videos load up every day of people that are living in vans. Of all ages, retirees, millennials, you name the thing. Even UCLA, they have a safe parking program for students who do live in their cars or vans or school buses or whatever they they've made it into a home. So, and if you're living in a car or in a camper van, matter of fact, if I've never, you know, let me see if I can find a number on that. Square feet, average square feet, let's see, in a camper van or a camper. I know they, you know, vary, but let's see if I can find, all right. All right, 8 feet multiplied by however long will give you the roughly the square footage of a camper van, but with all the cabinets, appliances, and actual usable space, it's much smaller. Okay, so a 40-foot RV is equivalent to 320 square feet. Okay. How many square feet is in a 20-foot square foot? So that's 230 square feet. What's the average size of a camper? 12 by 35 feet. Let's see. Or it depends on what it is. 56 square feet. So it varies. So let's see. How many square feet is a 35-foot travel? That's 350 square feet. So some of these campers, you know, we're getting into less than 96 square feet of room. Matter of fact, Matt, let's see. How many square, because you do have people living. Let's see. Square feet in car. Well, of course, there are different types of cars. All right. How much surface area a car? A car typically has a total surface area of between 40 to 60 square feet. The average car is about 15 to 20 feet long and 6 to 8 feet wide, which translates to approximately 90 square feet of exterior surface space. All right. So you got different figures here. 50 square feet. Average square footage, let's see, again. Let's see a Prius, because you got some people in Priuses that are, let's see, Prius. Prius. All right. All right, this one guy measured, let's see. Okay, how much is inside of a Toyota Prius has plenty of interior space with seating for five, a passenger rate. Yeah, I'm trying to get a... Without mirrors, no, I don't want that. All right, we'll work on getting those numbers for you by tomorrow. How to estimate your car's square footage. Boy, okay. You got a calculator for that. Mid-size, four doors, minivans. I'll screenshot this and we can use it tomorrow or later today. All right, well, Chris, anything to add on before we sign off for today?
Let's see. Tomorrow we'll be having a discussion about the 45 units over there in Florida for that veteran that had lost his legs, Johnny Alexander. He's wanting to do those now 45 homes.
Is that a community that you've already organized?
Yeah. We already have 10 acres of land, and what we're looking for now is to what I would like to do is I want to see, you know, a 781, even if we set it up to where we had two projects and one built one side of it, one built the other side of it, and then we connected them.
No, okay, and that makes sense. Yeah.
These are all going to be ADUs that are a compliant for handicap.
And all right.
Nice little square build. Instead of it being 100, it's liable to be up to 500 square feet. But what we're looking to do is 16 by 16 or a 16 by 20.
Okay. All right. Well, that sounds like a good discussion for tomorrow. And like I said, we can start marketing because there are people out there looking for affordable, what I would call budget housing.
Right. All right. And maybe that would be the one thing that we could talk about on the open house area that we have to do the roadside models.
Right.
You know, we can set up some 781 builds right there in Orlando, come out, stand one up, and then we can offer it out to maybe a community organization that's there, and they just start utilizing and renting our buildings.
Right.
And we take our rental money and go buy more material and do another 781.
You know what, I'm going to reach out to some social workers. The social workers are always looking for housing for people. So, I'm going to get online and see if we can get one or two of them on as well. All right, then, tonight, Lone Wolf, on right here on Blog Talk. Look for that. You can and look this on Monday through Friday. See you guys tomorrow. Everyone have a good rest of the day.